let me start with the why we are doing what we are doing around interoperability. So our job at CMS is to run the Medicaid program, Medicare, and the insurance exchanges. But I think that we also have a larger commitment, a larger responsibility to the entire healthcare delivery system. We are the nation's largest insurer, so a lot of what we do, the entire healthcare system follows what we do. So we're taking a leadership role around interoperability. As many of you know, our healthcare spending in this country is headed towards $1 in every $5 being spent on healthcare by 2026. As we know, that is completely unsustainable for the country. And so a lot of what we are doing at CMS is thinking about how we can make the healthcare system more efficient. When I think about all of the priorities that we have at CMS, just a few weeks back, we set out all of the things that we are working on. But I think interoperability and our work around creating seamless data exchange is probably the most important thing that we are doing in terms of driving more efficiency in the healthcare system. And it has the ability not only to impact every single patient in the United States, but it has the ability to impact the system as a whole and help create sustainability for our programs. Let me go through some of the reasons around that. So from the provider level, they're able to make decisions looking at the patient's complete records. They have all of the information possible to make better, sound decisions that are going to lead to higher quality and better healthcare outcomes. They're not repeating tests. They're not duplicating tests because they can see the entire healthcare record. So I think we know, and for patient safety, they're not providing treatment that may not be appropriate for that particular patient. So from a provider, just from a physician treating a patient, there's a lot of value there. And a lot of ability to help us deliver better coordinated care, higher quality care, and lower costs if the physician has all of that information. From the patient level, all of us have had the experience of going to the healthcare system or going through the healthcare system and not being what I call an empowered patient. I'm sure you can all tell your own stories about not having access to data and what that has meant to you. So by empowering patients, not only with cost and quality information, but also having their medical record, it increases the level of patient engagement that we haven't quite had before. When people better understand their health and their health care, they're able to participate in driving towards better health care outcomes. So it's a better experience for the patient and better for the providers. From a larger perspective, we're also focusing on innovation. And innovation, when we think about that, most folks think about this in terms of technology, new medications, and I think all of the work that we are doing is going to help that. Imagine having healthcare records that are more complete, that they start when the time baby is born, and every single interaction that person has with the whole healthcare delivery system is now captured in that medical record. It could also be enhanced by claims data, which is what we're talking about today, and also wearable technology and devices, all of that being put into one place. And what that means for researchers and innovators when they have that complete data set, I think this is sort of the beginning of what we're calling the digital data revolution, because having that data is going to spur innovation in a way that we haven't seen before. The other area that we've been focusing a lot on is payment reform and innovative payment models. So as we're trying to move away from a fee-for-service system to paying providers based on the results that they achieve and the outcomes that they achieve, holding them responsible for achieving high quality, and essentially requiring them to be more on a budget-based system rather than paying them for every little thing that they do. When we do that, we are spurring more innovation, and they need interoperability. They need all this healthcare information so that they can be preventing diseases, and they can be doing the things that they need to do to prevent a person from going to the hospital. You know, one of the things that I heard about was when I met with Stanford University, and they were talking about they've developed the ability to analyze patient data and predict which patients are going to come to the hospital. So we're now in an era of artificial intelligence and machine learning that we can actually predict which patients are going to need health care, and it gives our providers the ability to try to prevent some of these instances from happening. So that's kind of a why we are focusing on this and why it's such a priority for CMS and also for HHS. Just in terms of what we released last year, and I'm going to talk about this in the speech, but our focus began on My Healthy Data as an initiative in collaboration with the White House Office of Innovation. We started this with Jared Kushner and Chris Liddell. We started listening sessions in 2017 around this. And last year at HIMSS, we announced the My Healthy Data initiative, which is all about empowering patients with their health data. And so I'm going to talk about the progress that we've made within this last year. In 2018, we put out final rules for hospitals and for doctors, essentially saying that for hospitals, they're going to be penalized if they're not sharing data with their patients. And the same thing for clinicians, that their incentive payments are now going to be tied to their ability to share data with their patients and interoperability. So that was last year's initiative. At the same time, we led the market with our Blue Button 2.0 initiative. And what we did there was essentially, we unleashed all of our claims data for Medicare patients. Since that time, we've had 1,500 app developers that are actively using or in the sandbox and are coming up with different ways of using that data. We have 18 app developers that are actually have apps that are in production and thousands of patients that are already using this. And if you haven't had a chance, I would recommend that you look at our Medicare.gov website and you can look at some of these apps. They're really exciting. You know, for the first time, our patients have the ability to donate their data to researchers. There's also the ability, I think there was one health plan that came up with a really cool app that essentially looked at the medications the patient was taking and gave recommendations about which health plan might work best for them and would lower their out-of-pocket spend. So those are just a couple of examples, and I think it's sort of the beginning of understanding how this data can be used. So we did that last year. So within 1 year, 1,500 app developers, 18 in production, and thousands of people already starting to use this. What we did in our rules that we announced yesterday was essentially proposed that all of the insurance companies that do business with CMS, so Medicare Advantage plans, Medicaid Managed Care, and all the exchange plans, that they follow our lead and they release their claims data as well. We think that that's important, an important step towards empowering our patients and making sure that they have access to their data. There was also a few other things that we did in the proposed rule, which you'll hear more about. We're taking action around information blocking, defining what that means, and then also talking about the sanctions that we have for providers that are engaging in information blocking. We also put a nod towards the FHIR standards, and as we are working towards interoperability, one of the things that's very important is to have standards, and so that we're communicating in the same way, and when we're talking about specific health conditions, that we're all, that we agree with standard about how we're going to communicate that, so we put a nod to the FHIR standards as well. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about some of the different pieces in my speech later on. You know, at the end of the day, everything that we're doing, though, really focuses on our efforts to empower patients. We think that patients need to start being at the center of the healthcare system, and we want to make sure that they have all the tools that they need to make the decisions that are going to work best for them. So whether it's price transparency, quality transparency, or having their healthcare record. We've heard some fantastic stories about the experiences that patients are already having by having access to their healthcare data. I told this story this morning, but it's worth repeating. Even in this very short time, we had somebody who had used Blue Button 2.0. They were able to download the information, and they were able to review the services that their parent was receiving. And they noticed right away that their parent, their mom, was supposed to be receiving a piece of durable medical equipment. It was supposed to be delivered every month, but they knew that it had not been in their parent's room. It wasn't there. So that's a great example of, you know, there's also the potential just using this data around fraud and abuse. And we were brainstorming with the team about, you know, we need to make it easier for our beneficiaries to report instances where they see something in the claims data that doesn't match up with the services that they got. So I think we're just beginning to think about all the potential uses of the data. But at the end of the day, I really want to focus on patients and empowering them and making sure that they have the information that they need. So with that, I will open it up to questions.
Sorry. Commissioner Turner, so I write for a journal here in Central Florida, targeting a lot of the senior 65 and older. So they're a popular constituent, my parents are part of that constituent, and the question comes to data security and also data ownership. So I know we talk a lot about having the silos open and being able to have free flow of information. Can you comment about the data ownership? Because that's one of the biggest concerns about the older population, who really owns this information in context, and then who monetizes this information? Because as we talk about the digital economy and where data is monetary gains, how do I protect them also if they don't have a big account on that?
Sure. Well, let me say that in everything we do, we're putting patients first. And we understand that patients want to be secure when they're dealing with their healthcare data. They want to know where their healthcare data is going. One thing I want to make very clear to the entire healthcare system is that the data belongs to the patient. It's their data, doesn't belong to the provider, doesn't belong to the EHR company. It belongs to the patient. That being said, when patients are sharing their data, they need to who they're sharing it with, they need to be aware of where it's going. And so one of the things that we've done with Button 2.0 is we sort of enhanced data privacy and security, and we've made it very clear that the information that the app developers are providing, that they make it very simple, very clear definitions, so that patients understand where their data is going. And we understand that this is a very vulnerable population, so we want to make sure that that information is very clear to them. That being said, I think that our focus on privacy and security is something that's going to be ongoing. It's not something that we can say we're one and done. We need to be constantly vigilant around this issue. So we're going to continue to work on that. Even with Blue Button 2.0, we've done a lot of work on the front end to be very clear about this, to make sure that the app developers are very transparent about how the data is being used. The other thing that I'll mention that we did in the rules last year is that around incentive payments for doctors and for the penalty program for hospitals, we said even in order to qualify for these things, you have to meet the base standards around privacy and security, that to even qualify for these programs, you have to meet that. That's sort of your ticket to even come to the party. You have to make sure that we have data privacy and security as a base.
So to be a little bit specific, patients in the hospital, patient has an MRI. Is that MRI data the patient's or the hospital's? Because the hospitals are telling me it's theirs until the patient leaves the hospital. The patient can't see it, know what's in it, unless the doctor chooses to tell them.
I want to be very clear. It is always the patient's data. Their information, it belongs to the patient. It doesn't belong to anybody but the patient. That's who it belongs to. And I think we're making that very clear, in terms of what we're saying around information blocking. I think the rules that came out from the Office of the National Coordinator make it very clear what information blocking is and isn't. And we're making it clear that those that engage in information blocking, we're going to expose the bad actors.
Next question.
You talked about the new requirements for having the EHR that's shareable. I'm curious if this is going to impose any additional burden on clinicians who have already maybe paid for previous EHR iterations. How do you respond?
So you're right, because the federal government has already spent $36 billion on this, and from our focus on our patients over paperwork initiative, not putting additional burden on providers is the top priority at CMS. So, we're not charging people to give information to patients. And we think also with moving towards the FHIR standards, where this becomes something that's being used across the whole system, that this shouldn't be an additional cost. But that's something that we put in the proposed rule, and we're going to hear back from providers, but there's certainly no intent. And I think that once this is standardized across the whole system, there really shouldn't be an increased cost. The other thing that I will say is that as we're focusing on this, we're not just focusing on the EHR, right? So our whole strategy doesn't require the EHR to be at the center of this, that it's possible that there's other opportunities for other vendors to come in and to make that data more available.
I'm Mike Reiter, based in Europe.
information walking is and isn't, and try to, you know, give some more context to this. We've all heard the horror stories of information walking. We've heard hospitals, for example, that have to ask permission from their EHR vendors about how they can use the data. We've heard, you know, issues with patients. I've gone through my own personal experience when, you know, leaving the hospital and wanting to have healthcare information or having records and tests to not be able to have to have access to that information. So I think that what we've done in our rules is to better define that of what it is and what it isn't. But I think we're going to continue to refine that. It's a proposed rule, so we're looking forward to input from the stakeholders.
So this set proposed rules is going to be accessible on the web?
Yes. Yes.
The information logging rule, that's ONC's rule, and so who would be enforcing that?
So that's where we sort of work hand in hand with ONC. So ONC is sort of saying this is what information logging is, and then CMS really has the authority, the regulatory authority for around enforcement. And so that's kind of how they work together. So they're defining it, and CMS enforces it.
And what sort of penalties are those that do engage in information logging? I understand that you have a list of organizations that are engaging. Would it be similar to, you know, OCR and a list of companies that have had breaches, or, you know, how would this?
Sure, I think all of that is appropriate. We're trying to use, you know, our authority under penalty program and our incentive program, so that's attached to interoperability. So for hospitals not to be penalized and for providers to get incentives, their payment is tied to how they do around and how they are performing on interoperability. So if they're engaged in information blocking, that is going to affect them financially. We imagine that Congress or other folks may take further action to penalize those that are engaged in information blocking.
Yeah. Neil Purcell with Genome Web. So I want to ask you about genomic data, maybe in the larger context of precision medicine. It seems like data from labs, there have been issues getting data from labs in discrete data from labs into EHRs. How is this rule going to address that question and also maybe deal with the larger data sets that you're dealing with when you start talking genomics and precision medicine?
So our goal is to create a record that's very complete for the patient, whether it's their lab data, whether their genetic, if they want that. I think at the end of the day, what we're focusing on is letting patients be in control of their data. So if they want lab data, if they want genetic data, that's up to them, and that they should drive it. I think though we're hearing some great examples of lab data even being available. You know, people that are moving across the healthcare delivery system and now are able to retrieve 10 years worth of lab data and the results. And so I think that's really important though, as we're trying to lower healthcare costs when providers have access to that data.
Tomorrow or said on Neil's question, we have patients now that are producing along their own data and wearables, Apple, insurers. We now have great sources of data for which there's no infrastructure yet to even input it into our system. So how do you see this interface working for patient generated data?
Well, that's exactly where we want to get, right? So that a patient can build their healthcare record as they see fit. And we should have the ability to have all of that information in one place. So we're starting with electronic health records. We're starting with claims information. But I think there's also a lot of efforts around devices. And this is sort of the beginning of that effort to make sure that we have a complete healthcare record. I think there's a lot of conversation. There's the center in Nashville around interoperability, and they're specifically focused on devices, trying to get interoperability around equipment in hospitals, so all the monitoring machines and things like that, to be able to collect that data and put it into the EHR to make that part of the patient's record. So I think that's where we're headed. If you can imagine all of that data being able to be in one record.
Since you become administrator, you have certainly emphasized a free market. But I think in order to accomplish what you're looking to accomplish, there are strong regulatory levers that are needed as well. Can you talk about that confliction and how that impacted the rule yesterday?
Sure. So from where I sit, we are very much in a deregulatory mode. I think from the President Nemeth has made this clear with cutting the red tape and his initiative. CMS took this on with our Patients Over Paperwork initiative, where we're examining regulations and trying to figure out how do we decrease burden for providers. There's been so much regulation for so many years. A lot of times there's conflicts, there's things that are outdated. So you're right, we've been very focused on deregulation. We want to hold providers accountable for delivering results, and we don't want to micromanage the process, which is what I think CMS has done. That being said, on this particular issue, the federal government invested $36 billion, and look where we are. Patients don't have access to their medical record. So there's a time for us to focus on deregulation, and we will be pushing forward as much as we can on that. But in this particular case, the industry hasn't done the right thing. We haven't put patients in the center of the system, and people are entitled to have their healthcare information and their record. Because that didn't happen, it's requiring the government to step in. I will also say that, you know, over the past year and a half, we've talked to a variety of stakeholders. And I've been surprised. Can't even tell you how many people have pulled me aside, from CEOs of large insurance companies to CEOs of large healthcare systems. Everybody knows that this is the right thing to do. And they said, you know what, we need the government to force us to tell us to do this. And if it was being done, we wouldn't have to do what we're doing today.
I want to get to your broader point about cost that you had earlier. So, just because a patient may have a more complete record on their phone, they're still going to be tied to an insurance product through their employer or through an exchange. So how do you see this as actually driving down the cost of care when you're tied to a plan that has negotiated rates with providers?
So a couple things. There are still different. So even within a provider system or within a health plan, there's going to be different negotiated rates across different settings. And different insurance companies might have different negotiated rates. We want to get to a point where when people are seeking health care, right, that they're able to just pull up on their phone, I need this service, and here's how I'm going to identify a high-value provider. And that's a high-value provider is one that is producing high-quality results at the lowest possible price. And when they're in that position where they can shop around for services, and they need to be able to take their healthcare information along with them. So that's how we feel like it'll impact costs, because it'll create an environment where patients are not just being told where to go, but they're empowered as consumers to identify those high value providers and seek out those that are high quality and low cost.
I have one last question. I wanted to ask about Senator Grassley's letter that he sent to CMS last Friday about the $729 million that GAO kind of identified as potentially fraudulent electronic incentive payments that didn't meet meaningful use requirements. Do you have an update on where that stands and the recovery of those funds?
Continuing to look at that, I will say that that happened before this administration came into office. So obviously, program integrity is a strong focus for this administration. We don't have extra dollars for fraud and abuse, and so